Tom Gimbel, who joins us most weeks. He is the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be with you, John.
It's vacation time, you know, summer, June, July, and we saw a story last week I meant to bring up that was headlined, "Taking a Vacation from Work May Soon Become Mandatory." With burnout prevalent in the workplace, some employers are considering mandatory vacation. What do you know or think about that, Tom?
I think it should be mandatory. I mean, at most companies, I think all companies give, you know, in the old school format was 2 weeks, and then you'd get a week every 3 or 4 years, and you'd max out at 4 weeks usually, or maybe 5 weeks. And then with the advent of technology companies and the competition, you know, you got unlimited vacation time. And I'm a big believer that employees, forgetting whether burnout is real or not real, just the ability to recharge the batteries and get away is a healthy thing.
That some companies offer unlimited personal time off is seen as a gift, and other people think it's a ruse. That is, it's a way to get people to work more, because if you don't define the vacation, they tend to take less. What do you know or think about all of that?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it that there's companies that offer it just to say they have it, and then there's companies that encourage it. But I mean, in reality, you know, if an employee thinks that because you have unlimited vacation time, you're going to get 10 or 12 weeks off, I think they're fooling themselves. I think the real goal of it from good companies is to say you don't need to count every half day, every quarter day, every three-day weekend, and that if business is going great and you're doing your job well and you've got a wedding or you've got extra things going on, just go and take it. It's not meant for people to be taking 2 or 3 weeks off 4 or 5 times a year. I don't believe that's ever the intent.
It's 12:13 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You probably heard that J.J. Redick is going to be the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. And while he was a good player and has been a popular podcaster, people have been sort of chuckling at his work resume as a coach. And when they post it, it goes like this. Brooklyn Basketball Academy, 2023-2024, volunteer fourth grade boys head coach. Next coaching job, Los Angeles Lakers, 2024-2025. And the upshot is that when men see a job with qualifications, if there's something that they don't have, they think, well, that's okay, that doesn't apply to me, or I've got all the other boxes checked. But women tend to see the list of qualifications, and if one of them doesn't apply to them, then they edit themselves out of contention. Is that true? What do you think about all of that?
I think a couple things. I think number one, when we get into the male and female stereotypes of applying for jobs, we're living in 1975 and thinking it's the day of the Kelly girl who's going in to be a typewriter pool employee. And I just think that's selling women short. And I think people are doing this for clickbait. And I think women are the most competent, aggressive, at least equal to men, if not superior in so many ways. And I think, you know, men may not overthink things sometimes, but I think to sell women short that they need to have every qualification before they apply is really an insult to women when you read articles like that, number one. Number two, on the J.J. Redick thing, you know, I mean, look at how many founders, if you go back in time to when, you know, Jeff Bezos founded Amazon and 2 years later he had thousands of employees, or Michael Dell or Howard Schultz. And I think that sometimes because we all think we know so much about sports that there's other things that are important, and what you're doing is A, you need to understand the game, B, you need to be a leader of people, and in this case leader of men, but leader of people. You need to understand the different generations of 18-year-olds to 25-year-olds to 35-year-olds. I understand that that's not different generations literally, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And the ability to surround yourself with people who are experts in other ways. And so, you know, J.J. Redick from 30,000 feet, you know, he went to Duke. He's extremely intelligent intellectually. He knows the game, and it's a challenge he wants to take on. And so I think there's plenty of coaches who get hired who are retreads who fail miserably. So sports management and sports coaching, I don't think there really is a method to the madness on the definition of success.
I think
other than work ethic and ability.
I think, well, that's an interesting point. I also think it might be particular to this job. That is, he's a friend with LeBron James. And in the NBA, it's not just are you X's and O's, but can you manage the talent pool that you have? And maybe with a LeBron James, you don't coach him so much as you collaborate with him. And that may make J.J. Redick, in this case, a good hire. I do want to go back, though, to some of the things you were saying about women applying for jobs. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Tom Gimbel, the job expert, the founder of the LaSalle Network. Tom, we were talking a moment ago about how women tend to exclude themselves from jobs, if they see something on the list of qualifications that doesn't apply to them, whereas men are more ready to look past that. This listener said, I never applied for jobs where I did not meet all of the requirements. Then I got a job and realized I didn't need most of them or had other useful qualities. Now I apply for jobs if I think I can do it well and try to sell myself in the interview. Big problem is getting that initial interview. Often you just never hear back. What do you say to that person, Tom?
I think that if realtors only showed people houses that had everything they wanted, they'd be very bored with nothing to do all day. And I think it's the same thing of looking for a job, is that companies will list everything they want, but not just the things they need. And when people go and look for jobs, you shouldn't limit yourself. The question is, are you qualified? And qualified means, can you do it? No one has every single ability. Using the basketball analogy from our last conversation, everybody isn't LeBron James, but there's a lot of guys that can play in the NBA. And I think that you have to, it's more about relevant experience and work ethic and attitude than it is matching bullet point for bullet point of, well, what somebody says.
How much of the job process these days is a personal interview?
Oh, I think a lot. I think now the difference is that so many have defaulted to Zoom versus face to face in person, and I think that is a negative for a certain part of the population. On the flip side, it's a positive for others who may not present as well. Handshake, eye contact, body language. There's a lot that goes into getting a job. But I do think that the interview process is still the end-all of getting a job.
Right, but I'm suggesting that some people don't get the interview and they know they'd sure like the chance to try and sell themselves, but they never get a chance to meet face-to-face. Didn't you tell us once that you should show up, go to the place of employment, ask to speak to the HR person?
Yeah, well, I said you should reach out to the contacts that are responsible for the job. And a lot of times that the people who are in human resources versus the hiring managers may have different vision of what type of person is needed for the role. And one may be screening too heavily, and quite frankly, one may be screening not enough. So the real question is, can you find a contact within the organization? And the other thing that people have to realize about the job market is companies and managers and departments have certain pain thresholds. And when a job opens, the pain may not be that great. And so they may want something that's exactly that they're posting.
Mm-hmm.
3 months later, the pain may be very severe because they haven't filled the role, and they may knock off 3, 4, 5 items on their wish list and be more open. So a lot of a job search comes down to timing.
I can imagine, though, somebody seeing a job posted or being aware of a job that's available at a business, and rather than hoping that their resume gets noticed and then they get a response, because mostly you don't, they just show up and they say, can I speak to the person in that department or the hiring manager or whatever. And I think they fear that the people at the company are like, okay, we know for sure we're not going to hire this guy who just shows up and says, I want to talk to you people. So I wonder if that's a good strategy or not.
It's not the best strategy. It really depends on the role that you're looking for. If you're a factory person and you're a blue-collar person and you wander into the back and ask to speak to the floor manager, the warehouse manager, you're looking for one, I think it's a great idea. If you're looking to be the vice president of marketing, you probably seem a little bit desperate.
That's the line you're treading there. It's Tom Gimbel. He is the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. Okay, Tom, let's have a conversation like this next week, too.
Talk to you next week. Stay cool. It's going to be a hot one this afternoon, John.
Yeah, it's warming up even as we speak. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for finding WGN Radio and me, John Williams. Producer Pete has Farron Dogs on the line, the founder and CEO of Harrison Wallace Financial Group, a regular guest. We talk about the markets a lot with Farron. Farron, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, John. I appreciate you having me.
So give me your umbrella outlook. Where are we big picture right now?
Well, big picture, I think we are going to be range-bound. I just see that some of the data that's been coming in, you know, for the Fed to make a decision of whether to cut rates or not has been a little wishy-washy. I think they need a little bit more solid data before they're willing to pull the trigger on that, so to speak. And I think partly some of that is due, you know, I've heard some people say, well, why are they waiting? That could put them in a precarious situation of waiting too long. And then you can run into some other issues such as recessions and that type of thing. But I think it's more of a matter of, you know, once bitten, twice shy, so to speak, because, you know, 3 years ago, they were telling us that inflation was transitory, right? And now they're like, well, we don't want to make another mistake on this. So they're being very calculated.
Yeah.
And as I've mentioned in previous conversations with you, at the end of the day, I'm not sure a quarter of a point cut is really going to make that big of a difference one way or the other, but it will at least show their hand as to, you know, they're getting started and getting ready to maybe be more aggressive about those cuts.
Well, the indices are all at pretty high marks, if not all-time highs, but nothing seems to be very plus-plus right now. Interest rates seem to be... they're not going up, they're not going down. Inflation isn't going up or down a lot. Everything seems to be just kind of even. And it's almost as if we're waiting for something to push us in one direction or another.
Yeah, I think the economy is kind of normalizing. And I think this is we've never come out of a pandemic, right? And so obviously we had supply chain issues, we had high demand, we had massive amounts of stimulus put into this economy, and then we open the floodgates and say, okay, everyone can go back to the stores.
Yeah.
And so, of course, that was going to drive inflation. And I think it's really taken this amount of time for things to kind of start to normalize. And I think that's what we're seeing here in kind of this range where we're not necessarily seeing big extremes one way or the other, with the exception, of course, technology. And you know, it's really interesting what's going on. If you look at an even weighted S&P 500 versus a cap weighted S&P 500, right now there's about a 10% difference in return. So the equal weighteds are up about 5%, whereas, you know, the weighted average, the cap weighteds are up 15% on the S&P 500. So it really tells a story that obviously tech is winning big right now. Mm-hmm. They're up about 18%. And you compare that to materials, which is up 5%. And we really should and hopefully will start to see a more broader participation in this market. I think we are starting to see it a little bit with financials and healthcare. Over the last month, those have come back nicely and are starting to participate. And I think investors as a whole are realizing, you know, I thought I was diversified in my index fund, but I'm realizing that it tracks technology pretty close because it's cap weighted. And that's
right.
A conversation I do like to have with clients and say, you know, there's a big difference between being equal and cap, because you're not necessarily buying, you know, the performance of the 500 index. At some point, you're buying the performance of 10 stocks.
Which is not what you want anyway. I mean, if you're buying an index fund on your own or with a broker, you're getting a cap-weighted fund, right?
Usually, yes.
And,
you know, usually they're going to
And
that.
Except that maybe that signals a little weakness in the underlying market. No harm in that. Take 18% instead of 5% if you can get it. But what?
Right,
what,
but yeah,
we'll finish that thought.
You have to be willing. You have to be willing to deal with the other side of that coin too, and that's when those tech stocks tumble. You know, you're going to probably tumble with them more than you would in an
fair
equal,
enough.
More diversified.
Okay, yeah. but what are the chances that NVIDIA is going to tumble anytime soon?
I don't see it tumbling anytime soon. I think this pullback we saw was a little bit of profit taking, and I think that, you know, we're seeing it up today, and I think people are looking for a buying opportunity to get into it, and I think that's both on the institutional side as well as the retail, you know, the retail customer. And, you know, with their recent split, I think it's made it a more attractive price point, of course. And, you know, there's been a lot of comparison of NVIDIA and some of the chip makers to, you know, to the internet boom bust of the late 90s. And there's a significant difference. You know, back in the day when you could just put a .com behind your name and all of a sudden have just a huge valuation in your stock, even though you weren't making any money. This is different. You know, NVIDIA has incredible revenues, incredible demand, and we're seeing that growth picture continue to be extended, you know, into the future. And because of the AI components and everyone that's getting involved with that. So I think this definitely has legs. But again, I again tell clients, you know, be disciplined, because I look back at like a Cisco. You know, Cisco still has not recovered to the prices it was in 2000, you know, 24 years later. And Microsoft, for example, from 2000 to 2013, it was in a $10 range between, you know, 25 and 35. So, you know, don't be afraid to take some profits off the table when you have them. Maintain the position if you like it. But, you know, just don't be too overweighted in one.
You know, what I'm wondering as you talk about all of that is, I wonder what then comes next. That is, if AI technology better enables businesses to be successful, get in on AI or get in on the chips that drive it, hello, NVIDIA. But then as that sort of technology is woven into the marketplace, what are the industries that would best benefit from that? And should that be a signal to buy those equities now? I wonder if you have a crystal ball about that. Isn't that the guessing game? Farron Dawes, founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group. But we'll pick up his answer here in a minute. First, let's get you more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Mediterranean fast casual chain Cava will open its second location in Illinois on June 28th. The eatery is among the hottest new U.S. restaurants and just recently opened its first Chicago location. The company says its new location is at Hawthorne Mall in Vernon Hills. Cava's menu includes customizable bowls, pitas, and salads. Its location in Chicago is in Wicker Park. Cava has 300 locations nationwide and wants to have 1,000 locations by 2032. It says the Midwest is one of the targets for its expansion. The founder of Gloria Jean's Coffee has died. Gloria Jean Kvetko was 82 years old when she died of pneumonia on June 14th. She opened the first coffee shop in 1979 in suburban Long Grove and eventually franchised and expanded to 230 locations worldwide. Gloria Jean's Coffee sales jumped from $18 million in 1982 to $47 million just 2 years later. The brand was known for its flavored coffees, including hazelnut and chocolate raspberry. Services will be held June 28th. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
I remember the Gloria Jean story well, and sure like that coffee. Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. Let's see who's on the phone.
Maria Calabandonakis, and I'm an assistant professor of agricultural and consumer economics at the University of Illinois.
Would you say your last name again, please?
Calabandonakis.
Calazon to Nikes?
Yeah, good job.
I'm guessing you're of Greek heritage.
Yes.
Okay, and what Maria has to tell us right after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, Maria Calazon to Nikes at the University of Illinois is in the food business.
Mostly what I get to study is why consumers make the decisions they make around food and how they feel about prices.
And a U of I study says while most of us are frustrated by food prices.
We did see that they thought that grocery store prices were relatively fair, and this was especially true for certain types of places.
Yeah, stores like Aldi and dollar stores.
We found that almost 40% said that they were going to those kinds of stores more often.
Restaurants are a different story, with a survey showing we are not feeling the love, especially for fast food joints.
Consumers were saying that they were going to fast food restaurants less frequently because of the high food prices, and that they thought that the prices at fast food restaurants in particular were unfair.
And the U of I survey found the reasons for foodflation do make a difference in how we feel.
So they were really relatively supportive of price increases to cover things like increased ingredient costs. So we saw that over 55% in both contexts, in grocery stores and in restaurants, consumers understood that that was a reason and they found that acceptable.
But when it comes to prices going up just to line the pockets of the stores and restaurants,
consumers were not on board with increases to support improved profitability, which is a criticism that you're seeing as by some politicians, that maybe food companies or restaurants are taking too high of profit margins.
And there are some of us, 15%,
who just doubled down and said there was absolutely no acceptable reason for increasing food prices and that companies along the food supply chain should take smaller margins.
And that's how we feel about food prices, according to the University of Illinois survey and researcher Maria Calazandonikes.
Yep.
June Dairy Month continues. Today is National Strawberry Parfait Day, and it's National Catfish Day. Hush puppies with mine, please. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
The bizarre weather that hit Chicago back in 54, a famous first at Second City, and hot dog history. It's This Week in Chicago History, Wednesday morning at 8:40.
The Bob Sirott Morning Show, tomorrow morning at 6.
WGN.
When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Chevy Silverado is an all-around workhorse designed with your work safety in mind. Automatic emergency braking, forward collision alert, and rear park assist are on the job with you 24/7, assisting when it matters the most. Let's face it, you need a truck you can count on. Silverado 2500 HD was ranked number one in vehicle dependability by J.D. Power in 2020. That's reliability you can count on. And when you need a real beast, Silverado 3500 HD offers up to 36,000 pounds of available towing and cabin space for the work crew. It's built for those big jobs. Chevy has a Silverado pickup that's just right. Half ton, three quarter ton, and one ton. Call it the Goldilocks effect. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup. So the best investment you'll ever make is your tools. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
At Wintrust, our approach is to let Northside fans show off their Cubs pride anytime, anywhere. With the Cubs debit card from Wintrust Community Banks, you're not just swiping, you're making a statement.
It's like a megaphone for your wallet.
Broadcasting your Cubs pride with every transaction. Open a Cubs checking account and receive a $300 bonus with qualifying activities. Visit Wintrust.com/Cubs today. Wintrust, different approach, better results. $100 to open, no monthly minimum balance and no monthly maintenance fees. Member FDIC.
All aboard! All aboard!
Get your tickets now for Day Out with Thomas, the Bubble Tour, at the Illinois Railway Museum in Union, Illinois. Saturday and Sunday, July 13th and 14th, and Saturday and Sunday, July 20th and 21st. Hop aboard for a real train ride with Thomas, Percy, and Sir Topham Hatt, and enjoy a variety of family activities. But don't delay. This event sells out fast. For ticket information, go to irm.org or just call 1-800-BIG-RAIL.
1250. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio, and we're talking to Farron Dogs, the founder and CEO of the Harrison Wallace Financial Group. We were talking about the performance of the S&P, and if you were an index fund, thank goodness it's cap-weighted because the other stocks in the S&P 500 aren't doing as well. If AI and chips are powering NVIDIA, say, I wonder what NVIDIA is going to empower or power. What's the next category, if you will, Farron, that maybe a smart investor would be looking at?
Sure. I think, you know, where AI is really being introduced heavily is definitely in the healthcare area. You know, you get a lot of diagnosis faster. You get predictive analytics as to what might be happening with a patient, and they're even doing like remote monitoring through AI from doctor to patient. And so I think that that industry is definitely ripe for the introduction of AI, and I think that will be embraced. One issue that might be a issue is going to be cost, right? So like all industries, the healthcare industry generally does struggle a little bit with financing and funding. But I do think that that's one industry. And then you look at other industries, such as even transportation and the logistics of that transportation, and how AI will help optimize not only the costs of supplies and maybe the best time to purchase those supplies, but optimize shipping routes and trucking routes and get it from point A to point B much more efficiently and cost effectively. And then, of course, I think the obvious one is probably marketing, just how AI, I mean, we've seen AI in the last year and a half just, you know, telling, asking it to draw a picture or create a logo, just the leaps and bounds it's made in that from a year ago, and just how much more definitive it is. And sometimes it's hard to tell a difference between an AI photograph or illustration and a photograph. So I think those three industries are definitely going to be spearheading a lot of AI introduction. But even in my own industry, you know, financial services, I think, you know, we see it all the time. I mean, from my side, we see it more in client acquisition and, you know, how we can best systematize our processes and make things more efficient for the investor and therefore hopefully help reduce some of the overall costs.
I was thinking about how interesting and complicated a Monte Carlo calculation is for a client. How,
right.
And that was pre-AI. Imagine if they were able to drill down into more specifics, you know. They
right.
could tell me
exactly.
Tuesday at 4:30 you should do this. I was even thinking as you spoke about how AI might say, imagine the various routes that trucks, cars, cabs, Ubers should take. And I know that some of that is already happening, but you can just imagine how much more powerful this technology is and how real-time specific it could be.
Right, right. Because you think of an app like Waze, many times it will direct you different routes, but now you get AI involved and that's gathering data from so many different data points.
Yeah.
And so it seems like it could be even that much better.
Give me 3 minutes on this. I've got I don't know that I have three left, but you mentioned inflation and you also mentioned interest rates. And you said that if we actually lose a quarter point, if the Fed does something maybe in September or whenever, you don't think that's going to have a big impact on the economy. Is that right?
Well, I don't think it's going to have a big impact on the economy. I think it's going to signal that, you know, they are definitely in an easing mode. And I think that will bode well for confidence and you know, just how the overall feeling about inflation is. But I think you and I would agree that I'm not really sensing a big relief at the grocery store, you know, when I go to buy groceries. So we haven't really seen that type of inflation come down. But as a whole, I think any kind of reduction will be a step in the right direction for the markets and the economy, because hopefully it'll lend more affordability for people to purchase houses. Maybe it will cut interest rates on those mortgages, and maybe people will not feel like they're kind of confined to their home, because that's why we're experiencing a lot of this shortage is people that are wanting to move. Maybe they're empty nesters. They're feeling, well, where am I going to move to that's this affordable for me? Because I'm in a 2.75% mortgage. If I sell this and I have to mortgage my next place, I'm in at 7%. So as those rates kind of come down, I think that we'll start to see that ease as well, because housing is such a big pinch right now. Yeah, we're kind of in this conundrum with housing, because we see more supply come on online, but it's expensive supply.
I wonder if the impact of a, say, a quarter point reduction or a modest reduction in 30-year fixed mortgages would be more psychological than financial, but it might finally get people moving again. Maybe it doesn't make
any
difference, but they're like, hey, it's come down, and I'm just waiting for some little nudge, and now I got it.
Right. I think that, and then also the expectation that these rates would continue to come down. So maybe someone would get in on a mortgage with the expectation of, well, I should be able to, or I'm hoping to be able to refinance this in a year,
I get that. Farron Dawgs is the founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group, Harrison Wallace Financial Group. It's always interesting to talk to you, Farron. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. Have a great day.